This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. The story of Hector Berlioz's relationship with William Shakespeare is a story of life imitating art, with art coming out the clear winner. In 1827, when Berlioz was 24 years old, he went to see productions of Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet and fell head over heels in love. Even though he knew no English, he could still grasp the meaning of the drama and the poetry of the words. And in more ways than one, Shakespeare became his lifelong obsession. He bought the plays in translation, gave dramatic readings, and discussed them endlessly with other artists like Victor Hugo and Alexandre Dumas. He saw the whole heaven of art and understood the true meaning of grandeur, beauty, dramatic truth, end quote. And just about every artist and would-be artist in Europe responded the same way. Shakespeare confirmed their belief that the subject of art was life, and its limits those of existence itself, and thus the Romantic era was born. Much of the rest of Berlioz's time was spent in pursuit of the woman who had played Ophelia and Juliet, an Irish actress named Harriet Smithson. For 6 years, he essentially stalked her, taking in all her performances and writing her passionate letters that were so over the top, they alarmed her. But eventually, even though he spoke no English and she no French, they married in 1833. Franz Liszt was one of the witnesses. Hector and Harriet may not have been as star-crossed as Romeo and Juliet, but the marriage did not last. Harriet was on the downside of her career, and a tragic accident only hastened the process. She was already an alcoholic with a violent temper, and Berlioz eventually left her for another woman. But when she suffered a series of strokes in 1847, he not only paid to have her attended night and day, he visited her almost daily until she died 7 years later. In the meantime, Berlioz continued to compose, making his living as a critic while writing works that bewildered conservative Parisian critics, like his Requiem, the Symphonie Fantastique, and Harold in Italy, his symphony with viola solo. He had written Harold for the great violinist Niccolo Paganini, who initially refused to play it, saying it wasn't virtuosic enough for him. Paganini finally did hear it played by someone else, and was so overwhelmed that he sent Berlioz a gift of 20,000 francs, about $90,000 in today's money. The gift enabled Berlioz to get out of debt and return to a project that he had neglected for some time, a dramatic symphony based on Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Berlioz had always had his critics. He once had one of his pieces performed under an assumed name to see how they would react. At least one said that Berlioz would do well to learn from the supposed composer. Romeo and Juliet would not only be an answer to his critics, it was his response to the challenge all composers felt had been laid down by Beethoven's Ninth. What was a symphony, and what could it be? Berlioz was transformed by hearing Beethoven's Ninth almost as much as he had been by Shakespeare. The dramatic potential of music alone was suddenly revealed to him. Berlioz proposed a Romeo and Juliet that was almost an anti-opera, in which the words served mostly as scene setters, and the important actions and emotions were expressed instrumentally by the orchestra, in what Thomas Mann called that speaking unspokenness that belongs to music alone. Berlioz had been thinking about and writing sketches for Romeo and Juliet for some time. He had first discussed the idea with Émile Deschamps, his eventual librettist, in 1829. A year later, in Rome, Berlioz mentioned to Felix Mendelssohn the idea of a scherzo on Mercutio's Queen Mab speech. And in an article on Italian music he wrote in 1831, he gave a kind of ideal scenario for a Romeo and Juliet opera which emphasized the reconciliation between the two warring families. He had just seen Bellini's I Capuletti e i Montecchi and had been very disappointed in the absence of this solemnly peaceful theme, because he felt it would be a natural for a large-scale, dramatic, operatic ending. Eventually, the idea would become the climax of Berlioz's dramatic symphony. The complete symphony for chorus, orchestra, and speakers is divided into seven parts, but the ones you'll hear most often in the concert hall are the three central orchestral scenes, which correspond to an allegro, adagio, and scherzo of the conventional symphony of the time. The finale is made up of the remaining choral scenes depicting Juliet's supposed death, the funeral procession, the two lovers' suicides, and finally the grand scene of reconciliation, which turned out to be grander than almost anything on the operatic stage at the time. The introduction depicts the opening scenes of Shakespeare's play, with a street fight between members of the warring households of the Montagues and Capulets. The fight is broken up by a brass fanfare signaling the entrance of the Prince of Verona, who orders the families to keep peace on pain of death. The next scene is called Romeo Alone, and corresponds to the scene in Act I in which Romeo confesses to his friend Benvolio how lovesick he is over the fair Rosaline. The scene ends with the sound of the party at the Capulets, which Romeo and his friends crash, and at which he first catches a glimpse of Juliet. Next comes the love scene, the first meeting between Romeo and Juliet. Berlioz often said this was the music he loved best of any he had written. And finally, the Queen Mab Scherzo, which depicts Mercutio's speech in Act I, in which he teases the lovesick Romeo. Mab is the queen of the fairies, and Mercutio describes how she comes in dreams in different guises to bewitch men's minds. It's reminiscent of Mendelssohn's scherzo from A Midsummer Night's Dream. Not surprising, given the conversation Berlioz had had with Mendelssohn about Romeo and Juliet some 3 years earlier. But as Mercutio's speech gets bawdier, so does the music, going in directions Mendelssohn would never have imagined. Thank you. full symphony had its premiere in 1839 with Berlioz conducting. The critics were mystified, as much by the unorthodox structure of the work as by the whole idea of an anti-opera, as Berlioz had put it. But Franz Liszt was a great admirer of the work, and Richard Wagner was overwhelmed. He realized how much he could learn from it, especially from Berlioz's use of recurring themes and signature melodies, what Wagner would eventually call leitmotifs. Just as Romeo and Juliet would not have been possible without Beethoven's Ninth, Wagner's Ring Cycle might not have been possible without Romeo and Juliet. You can find out more about the San Francisco Symphony's programs at www.sfsymphony.org. This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.